Okay, we'll start with the Mishnah on the bottom of Tzadik Gimel Amud Bet. Mishnah states, "Mocher peirot chaviro, harzeh mekabel avrova tinofet l'sa'ah." So a person who purchases fruits from an individual, he accepts the fact that within that sa'ah fruit that he buys, there'll be a certain percentage of waste. That percentage of waste is assumed to be rova tinofet l'sa'ah, which would be rova kav l'sa'ah, which is 1/24th of the produce would consider it or normal to have this waste in it. Now, te'inim, someone who purchases figs, mekabalav eser metulot tameya, he accepts that he'll get 10 wormy or rotten te'inim, figs per 100 that are there, meaning a 10% waste rate. Martef shel yayin, we're talking about a seller of wine, mekabalav eser kosusot tameya, he accepts that he'll end up with 10 barrels of bad wine, per the 100, again a 10% rate. Kankanim b'sharon, person who purchases either barrels or pitchers in the Sharon area, then he accepts mekabel avarser pit sot lemeya. Again, he accepts that it will be 10 bad chaviot per 100. Again, a 10% rate of problem or this or waste that is assumed here. So now tani rav ketina rova kidnit l'sa'a. Rav Ketina makes a basic statement, which is that rova kidnit l'sa'a, that when we talk about this waste, for instance here, by say tvu'ah, talking about grains over here. When you have grains over here, the Gemara says that rova kav is acceptable waste per sa'a. Now he says when we get something other than the grain that you purchased, that's only if the replacement or the rova kav is actually kidnit, is actually something like a legume. It's not that it's garbage or dirt or rocks, but rather the discard or waste is not exactly what you had planned on buying, but rather some other item, some other produce. Bafarutlo, and what about, I mean, dirt you can't have in there, I mean, dust is not acceptable. Va'ama rabba barchia kitofsa amishmei duralba borer tzror migarno shochaviro noten lo dmei chitim. Person who picks out a pebble from the goren of his friend, from the threshing floor, from the area where he's, you know, finishing up the gathering of the wheat, if he pulls out a pebble, he has to pay him back not the value of a pebble, but rather he has to pay him back the value of wheat. Why? Because the underlying assumption is that when this person goes to sell his wheat, there's going to be this pebble inside of it. And when this pebble is inside of it, that will go towards the buyer and be accounted for as wheat equivalent. So since it would be wheat equivalent, when he pulls out the rock or the pebble from the wheat, he's actually causing him damage way beyond what the pebble is worth. It's actually damaging him the amount or value of the wheat that this would have replaced inside of any sale that he had made. Now, we have a number of quick things that we have to deal with. Number one is, why is he chayav? Number two is, why doesn't he just put the rock back inside? Right? I mean, if he took it out, just throw it back in. So that's the two questions which the Rashbam deals with. The first one is, why can't he put the rock back in? It says, right? It's almost the same as when we say that Janala be mevatel, something be adayim. If something's already in its batel, if it's in there, then we assume fine. But if you want to go mevatel, but adayim, you want to go and try to do it, right? Intentionally, we don't allow you to do that. That's the same thing over here. V'lokeach, the buyer is mochel, what's naturally found inside of the wheat or what's naturally found inside of the grain. What is not mochel is that you start pouring dirt into your wheat in order that it weighs, you know, I mean, that you get more, that waste or more, less wheat and more dirt. That he's not accepting of, and therefore it's unacceptable. That is cheating, basically, to place in alternates to the wheat itself. The second question is, why do you pay in this case? This is not hezek. This is, at best, what the Tosos qualifies it as dover hagorim lemamon. The Rivam, you can see the top, says the Rivam says this is according to Rabbi Shimon, who says davar gorim lemamon kemamon dami. Here you have an item that would cause value, right? Meaning that it itself does not have any value, but it will cause you to lose money because of its replacement value, or because of the inability to use it inside of the sale of the chitim. The Ri disagrees with them and says they can go either according to the Rabbanan, because there's a difference. Right over here, it's as if he stole wheat itself because he's allowed to sell the tzorot to kol adam. You're allowed to sell this to anybody. I mean, it's not unique. The value is not unique to this individual. The value is to anybody. Anybody who had wheat and had a pebble in it, this wheat would be valuable, and any buyer that bought it would accept the pebble inside of it. So it's a universal value. As opposed to when normally when we talk about Devar Gorim de Mamon, for instance, we talk about Chometz on Pesach. Chometz on Pesach, and maybe Devar Gorim de Mamon is because a Ganav or a Gazlan can say, Arshel Chalefanecha. So there, the value is only unique to one individual. That's the Gazlan or the Ganav himself. Devar Gorim de Mamon there is not that it's universally valuable. It's only valuable to this one individual who stole it because he can return it. Otherwise, it's worthless. So in that case, he says, even the Rabbanan might agree that Devar Gorim de Mamon is Kamamon Damit. That's the read, which focuses on Devar Gorim de Mamon. The Rashbam, on the other hand, focuses on that it's a Dine de Garmi. That it's a Garmi, it's beyond the level of Grama, but directed damage over your Hezek, as he calls it, Biyadayim. And that's the distinction that the Rashbam draws between Garmi and Grama. Over here, he says that we paskin that Garmi is Chayab Nizakin. But we do not. Obviously, Grama Nizikin is Patur. So he says, how do you distinguish between Grama and Garmi? He says, Grama is something where Hezek Nikar, it's clear damage, Aval Ein Osel Tobi Adayim, right, that he doesn't do it physically with his hands, Aval Gorem Achshav Shevo Hezek Mimelo L'Achazman. He causes that, he sets in motion something that allows the Hezek to happen by itself in the future, right? Something that will passively take place because of whatever activity he had now. Ava Dina de Garmi, when he talks about Dina Garmi, is be a daim hu mazik. He physically causes the damage, el she'ina Hezek nikar. But the Hezek's not apparent or clear. But for instance, in this case, the damage is caused by the fact that you pulled the pebble out. So you physically pulled the pebble out. Now, the pebble has no value. But it has what we call, it's not a Hezek that's Nikar. When you pull out the pebble, it doesn't look like you did any damage. But there is damage, which is that once it's sold, right now you've caused a loss to him. So that's Hezek being damaged, as opposed to Grama, right, which we've had before. We had in yesterday's daf, for instance, where the bad seed causes the person to plant. Over there, when he plants and he expends money, you didn't be a dime do anything. That you caused a process to put in place where someone who expended and then gets bad seed has lost money. So that's Grama versus over here, which is considered Garmi. So that's why you would be Chayav in this case. Either because it's a Devar Gorim de Mamon, Kimamon Dami, and even maybe the Reis says the Rabbana would agree in this case that this would be Chayav, or you say it's Dinei de Garmi. It's Dinei de Garmi, that's why you are Chayav. You cannot return the rock there because of the problem of Avla, or that's not a Mechila. Nobody accepts the fact that you'll throw rocks into your wheat in order to have it be considered or classified as wheat. All right, so now we have a problem. We have Rav Katina saying that the waste that is allowed to be or sold inside of your wheat can only be some other produce, like a legume. Or on the other hand, we have, you know, Rabbi Barchia in the name of Rabbah saying that you can even have dirt or rocks inside of that because if someone pulls the rock, there's value there. So where it says, kidney, the answer is kidney rova, afrovit, pachod mirova. So the Gemara says, wait, let's draw a distinction here. When we're talking about kidney, when we're talking about legumes, when we're talking about other produce being found in here, that we allow you up to rova kav. That's something that you can have a significant amount in there and that is still considered okay. When it comes to afrovit, when it comes to dirt or rocks, then a minimum amount, we don't have any qualification of what that amount is, but a minimum amount would be acceptable, but not large quantities, and that's pachot mirova, that would be even less than rova akav, that would be acceptable in this instance. So therefore, you are still causing damage when you pull it out, but it does not qualify under our mishnah to have a rova akav that is mechila. Gemara says, rova lo, afrovit lo lo, is that really true when it comes to dirt and rocks, pebbles, that we do not allow you to take a full rova, v'hatanya. Now we have a brisa. A mocher perot chaviro. When a person sells fruit to his friends. Chitim, when he's selling wheat, mikabal alav, rova kidnit l'sa'a. He accepts on himself, you know, one grova kab worth of kidnit of legumes per sa'a of wheat. Se'orim, if he's doing barley, mikabal alav, rova nishovet l'sa'a. He accepts one quarter of a kav worth of nishovet l'sa'a. Nishovet sounds like something like kash, some sort of hay or straw that gets mixed in with the se'orim. Adashim, when it comes to lentils, mikabal rova afrorit l'sa'a. But lentils, it comes out that he's willing to accept one quarter worth of dirt or pebbles inside of the lentils per sa'a. So my love, what's the underlying assumption here in the brisa? What din l'chitim l'se'orim? Right, the reason, what? It's chitin and sorin. Everybody would agree that the dirt can be any of these. Why are the examples right? What are the examples here? Why are they given? So this comes back to what Shaul mentioned before. All these examples are giving you items that are normally planted together or harvested together with these individual pieces. So when you go, when you speak about chitin, right? Chitim are normally planted together. That's what the Rashbam says. Kitnit or chedek gadel b'chitim. And legumes are normally found with, right, chitim. And yishovet is normally found with sorim. And afrurit, we'll see in a second why, is normally found by adashim. And that would speak to what you were saying before, the issue of kitniot, right, might have come exactly from this, exactly this problem, which is that they are grown together. And you see here that a buyer is willing to accept kitniot inside of chitim because it's so mekubal that they are together. So Mar says, okay, now, why is it? So, who attend the chitin usurim and shiny adashim, demikre akre luhu. Right, so now, the Gemara says that the reason by, adashim, that there is afrufit over here, why is it shchiach by the adashim? Is because as opposed to wheat or barley, which is normally harvested, lentils are pulled out of the ground. They are, right, grabbed and picked, in a sense, not the lentils themselves, but the entire plant is pulled out. So along with the plant comes all the dirt that goes with it. All right, so now, the figs, so the Mar says, El time of the shim akri akaluhu, aval chiti visare lo. So the Mar says, okay, so if that's the conclusion, that at the shim are different, and since the adashim are different, therefore the din of chitim and sorin is actually different. When the Mishnah said each item, it literally meant each item because adashim are unique in that phase. So if you want to say that, the time of adashim, dimakir akluhu, aval chitim sari, that you harvest, lo. If that's the case, tifshot mina, let us conclude from this, chitim sari, dafarid lo. Right, mekabel. So if that's the case, then you have a proof against the position of Rav Katina. Until this point, we were trying to bring, right, I'm sorry, you have a proof to the position of Rav Katina. Until this point, this was a question on the position of Rav Katina, who says that you don't accept Afrurit. So here we have a Brisa that explicitly says you do accept Afrurit, and we wanted to apply it to the whole Brisa. The Gemara comes back and says, no, it's unique to Adashim, it's unique to lentils. If it's unique to lentils, that means that by other items you do not accept Afrurit. If you do not accept Afrurit, then that sounds like Rav Katina. That's exactly like it. It should be a proof to Rav Katina. So why don't we say, Tifshu mina, chitisari dafarit lo, mekabel. He won't accept it. That would be great for Rav Katina. Where it says, no. Olam chitisari mekabel afarit. No, there is, no, we could learn the Mishnah, or basically what the Braisa, what the Gemara is going to do now is play both sides of the Braisa, and say that it's a proof to neither party here. Why? Because in this case, you could say, chitisari also, you can accept dirt. Dirt would be okay up to Rav Akav. Why is it only mentioned by Adashim? Adashim itzrichle. By Adashim, I needed the saka dat chamina. I would have thought, came into me, akrilu yoter merubaname. I would thought you could even accept more than Rav Akav, because everybody knows when you pick the Adashim out, there's dirt attached to the plant. So we don't even mention by Rav Akav. We just accept that when you pull the plant out, there's going to be a dirt attached to it. So now, Mikabo, Kamash Balon, that it only goes up to Rav Akav by Adashim. So now, based on the way we can learn the Brisa, now you can learn it either way. If Rav Katina comes along and says, this Brisa is a proof to me, that what? That dirt only applies by Adashim and not by other plants, we're going to say to him, no. Sorry, the reason that Adashim are mentioned over here is not because dirt only applies to Adashim, it applies to everything. Everything would accept dirt. Adashim are unique, because we would think we'd have to accept even more than Rav Akav. The fact that you don't is, right, that is, you only have to go out, the cap is Rav Akav, that's the chiddush of the Brisa. If you come along, Rabba, and says, yes, we accept dirt by a, right, all different types of plants, so what are you going to do? The Brisa just mentions Adashim, so that's what they're normally grown with. The Gemara will come along and say, no, the Brisa is not a proof to you, because you can say Adashim, shiny Adashim, because they're picked with dirt on them. But items that are not picked with dirt on them, that would not be acceptable. All right, so Amar Rav Huna. Rav Huna comes along and says, Imbal infot, minafet kulo. So this is an interesting question, or an interesting problem, which is that Rav Huna comes along and says, listen, what happens if you have more than a Rav Akav? You have more than a Rav Akav. So you're not permitted to sell more than a Rav Akav. It's a given. We know that up to a Rav Akav you're entitled to sell. Beyond the Rav Akav you cannot sell. So now what do you have to do? You have to reduce. So now once you go in there to start sifting, and you begin to sift the produce to take out, once you reach a Rav Akav, is it okay now? Or once you've begun to sift it, do we force you to sift it to its full end or full extent? So that's the question here. So Gemara says, Rav Huna comes along and says, once you are already sifting it, to remove it or to move it down below the threshold, which is Rumova Kav, you have to remove the entire amount. You can't leave any anymore. There is no mechila. So Gemara says, Amir Ladino, Ramal Kansel. Some, the Rav Huna's position, some say it's Mikar Din, that's the position. Some say it's a Knas imposed. So Amir Ladino, those that say it's a Din, meaning that this is Mikar Din, it's Kacha. Why? Mandi Ayv Zuze Apere Shapiri Yahayiv. Right, so the person who buys fruit, the person who purchases produce, expects to get produce when he buys it. Now, when it comes to Rova Lotara Chinish, when it comes to Rova Kav, the expenditure or value proposition is not worth it. For less than Rova Kav, you have a choice now. You can have the individual sift it out for you, right, and then you'll get pure content. But then the value or what you're paying for or the amount you're going to have to expend to have that tirka done is not worth the amount that you've removed. Meaning that the, right, when we say in the Mishnah Avot, right, when you look at a mitzvah, schar mitzvah, keneged hefseidah. Right, so it's over here. Look at the schar of having clean, right, produce versus the, right, the tircha or the hefseid, meaning the amount you have to expend to have someone clean it out. So that's not worth it. But once you get above the threshold of Rova Kav, then there is value to that. Now, once there is value to sifting it, then we're going to say there's a value to sift the whole thing. Once you're sifting, sift the whole amount. Don't just sift a portion of it. The whole question of Tircha is that the threshold is Rova Kav. Once you've crossed the threshold, sift the whole amount. Don't just sift the little piece to get you back to Rova Kav. Nobody wants to accept the dirt. Nobody wants to accept bad produce. The reason they're accepting it is because it's a cost-benefit analysis. And the cost-benefit analysis says don't sift it. But once you reach the threshold where the cost-benefit analysis says sift it, we mean sift it entirely. We don't accept, right, bad produce after that point in time. So that's the Gemara says here. Mandi Yoyiv Zuzei Peri Shapiri Yoyiv. Rova Lo Tarachinish. People are not going to expend or make the effort to do it when it comes to Rova Kav. Yoter Meruba, right, or Rova Kav, more than a quarter Kav. Tarachinish. The person's going to make that effort or expenditure. If that's the case, given the tarach, tarach bekule. Once you're making that expender, once you're making that effort, then nobody's mochel. They want you to do the entire amount. Right? And therefore, you're going to have to sift until it is clean entirely, and not just to get down to the old threshold, which is the threshold of Rova Kav. That's one possibility. The Amri law, the other possibility is kansel, that it's simply a knas. Now, when you say it's a knas, that means that minadin, even above Rova Kav, people would be mochel. Rova Kav is not a threshold in terms of mechila. People would be mochel even of larger amounts. Right, what we say over here in the first case, we're saying basically Rova Kav is an absolute threshold. People are only mochel below Rova Kav because of the cost-benefit analysis. In the second Lashon, in the Lashon of Kansel, we're saying that a person will be mochel up to even larger amounts. What is the threshold of Rova Kav? Rova Kav is what we assume to naturally come with produce. That's the natural appearance of such waste within produce. If you go beyond that, we start to suspect that it was tampered with. We suspect that the individual actually loaded more dirt or loaded more kidney oat inside of it to make money out of it. So Chamim imposed the knas. Once the threshold reached above Rova Kav, then we are now suspicious that this is not a naturally occurring, right, pebbles, dirt, or waste, depending on whose opinion you hold like. And therefore we're going to force it to sift the whole thing to dissuade people from loading their produce, dissuade people from putting waste into their produce in order to sell it at the higher prices. That's it. Barmi Lakanta, Ruva, Rova Kav, Shchiach. Right? So when it comes to Rova Kav, that's normal appearing. That's normal appearances of such waste. Yoter, Lo Shchiach. When it comes to more than a Rova Kav, it's not common. Viyu de Arif. And now we assume that the seller actually put the items in there, the waste in there. Came to Ariv, Kansur Rabbanim Mekule. Once we assume that he's the one doing it, that he's loading it, then we're konesim to take out the entire amount. So you say, once you're doing that, you gotta make sure that everything is taken out. So now the Gemara is gonna bring challenges to this basic position of Rav Huna, that one must clear out the entire amount once you begin to process it or bring it below the threshold. The first question comes from Kilayim, which is Meiteve. Kol Sa'ah, Sheish Barova, Mimin Acher Yima'et. Right, any sa'ah, when you're going to kilayim, any two species that you're going to plant, if there's sa'ah worth of one species, and within that sa'ah there is contained a rova kav of another min, yima'et, you must reduce it. We'll explain in a second what that means, yima'et, you must reduce it. That's a machlokas between the Rashbam and Tosafot here, what it means, must to reduce it. Now, Sabra, the underlying assumption of the Gemara here is the rova dikilayim kiyotarim rova, that of a case of mekach u'memkar. The underlying assumption is that rova kav bikilayim, rova kav in kilayim equals more than a rova kav when it comes to other produce. Alright, well now, what's the difference? Why would you not say that they're absolutely equal? Because kilayim is a, either you want to say the rabbinic Gershom calls kilayim is as an isra no associated with it, if you're talking about kilayim kerem. Otherwise, kilayim is a din doraisa. Whereas mekach u'memkar, you're dealing with mechila, you're dealing with dine mamonos. So by kilayim, the beis din can't be mafkia, right, the isur in any way. So there we have to be machmir for rova kav. When it comes to mekach u'memkar, you know, those are dine mamonos. So either people can be mochel or beis din can force the mechila over here. So that's why there'll be a difference between kilayim and mekach u'memkar. But, despite that fact, now what do we have? We have a din here. That when it comes to kilayim, when you have kilayim that has exactly rova kav of another species inside of it, what does the Braisa tell us to do? Actually, what does it tell us to do over here? The Mishnah tells us to do? Reduce it. Reduce it means what? Just take it down below the threshold. Take it down below rova kav. So we see from here that simply from taking it below the threshold is enough to make it okay. You don't need to clear it out entirely. So now why do you have to be yima'it over here? So the Rashbam brings two interpretations of why you have to be yima'it over here. One possibility is, he says that if it's not rova kav, then afterwards you can go ahead and plant it, because that's not considered kilayim. You reduce it below rova kav, you go to plant it, that's not kilayim. He also brings another possibility, is that they were planted. The seed is already planted in the ground, but has not taken root yet. Seeds are in the ground, they haven't taken root yet. And now, before they take root, then you want to remove some of the seed so there's no kilayim over here. So you go ahead and you remove the seed, and that's okay. But once it's rooted, it's already kilayim. Once the items have rooted in there, it's already kilayim. You can't remove it, pulling it out will do nothing. So that's the two possibilities that Rashbam offers over here. You have seeds, either a pile of seeds here that you're going to plant, yima'it means reduce it so they're not mixed together, or you already planted the seed but it hasn't rooted yet. So remove some of those seeds so you don't have kilayim over here, because there's not, you'll be below the threshold of what is considered kilayim.
According to the Sabbath, it says it's mechila, that it has to do with mechila, then it's not a good question, because we're dealing with das akona. And if he's not mochel, then how can you start bringing peace from kilayim?
So number one is, if it's kilayim is certainly not a din in mechila. Kilayim is simply a din in isur. Now if you deal with mechila, by our case, you have two possibilities. Either the lokeach is assumed as an umdana, that the lokeach is mochel in these cases, or beis din can force a mechila. You have hefker, beis din, hefker, and they can force a mechila in these instances. So mechila can create it. When you're talking about din mamonas, beis din can intervene to create the mechila, either because the umdana is this way, or they can establish beis din, hefker, and they can create such a mechila.
Was that the question?
My question.
Yeah.
Oh. Because you're agreeing with the reasons applied. Okay, it doesn't work for the mechila side.
Oh, so that's okay. So that happens to be a subject. Okay, that's. I'll get to the next question. Is who is this question on? Meaning that the Rashbam believes that the question on is the Lishna Kama Damri Ladina. That the question here from Kilayim is on the one that says it's a din. Kaparech v'lo akansa. It's not asking on the din that it's a knas, because a din of knas, you can set whatever the threshold is for knas. So when it's over, knas is not, but if you say that mikra din, there is some sort of form of mechila at a certain point, right, then the proof from the Mishnah in Kilayim is not whether there is mechila, there's no mechila, but simply about how do you rectify a problem. The Mishnah in Kilayim says the rectification of the problem, when we have a threshold, is simply to bring it below the threshold. So, same thing should be here. If we're dealing with mechila over here, there's a threshold above which something is mechila, a threshold below which something is not mechila. So why don't just bring it down below the threshold? If you bring it down through the threshold, that's enough. That's what the Mishnah in Kilayim says. Right? All we're dealing with is rectification over here. Do you have to clear the whole thing out, or is rectification simply enough to reduce it below the threshold? And this Mishnah seems to indicate that taking it below the threshold is enough to be on the okay, to clean stuff. So he claims that Tosfos disagrees with the Rashbam on two points. So number one, he says, first of all, he says, Ima'et is a lashon that's used when something's already rooted. Imait means to remove, not to take out, like reduce. Reduction, that is usually, it's a term actually that's used today in medicine. Reduction is used, for instance, with fetuses. If you have multiple fertilized eggs or fetuses, when they're doing when they do in vitro implantations, reduction is actually harvesting or taking down what already exists there, that's already been nishrash. So here also, the Tosa says that nishrash, when you say yima'it means to reduce something that's already nishrash, that's already existing there. That's number one. Number two, he says that the Rashbam, I love how he says, agav chorfe, it's a lashana, the Gemara uses someplace also, agav chorfe, but it's a sharpness, lo ayin, he didn't look so carefully, because it's not true, that even by Ashrasha, there isn't the problem of kilayim, because it's only true by kilei akeren. By kilei zraim, even if something's nishrash, it's mutar b'achila, it's mutar b'anah. Isra anah, isra achila only applies to kilei akeren, not to kilei zraim. And over here, we're talking about kilei zraim. Right, so that's the Tosfos says that it's not true. Even if it's nishrash, that's what we're talking about here, and it's a case of yimait. Tosfos says that the problem, yimait, you're allowed to reduce it. And he says the question is on the lashon of knas. It's not on lashon of dina, it's on lashon of knas. If you're going to be kones someone, right? So let's look at kilayim. Kilayim, it's an isur doraisa, right? And they already planted it, and he planted it with too much. So what do we tell him to do? Yimait. Just reduce it below the threshold and you're okay. So you reduce it below the threshold, then we're fine. But over here, and over here too, if you say somebody did something wrong or there's some reason that there's too much here, and you're going to be konesim, just be konesim to take it below the threshold. Right? Why are you making him clear the whole thing out afterwards? I mean, that if that we see already when you have a disadvantage, right? So we only make you take it down to the threshold or below the threshold. So over here, you should only have to bring it below the threshold if we're going to make it a kenas over here. Third, the fourth last line in the Rashi, this is to your question. He says, "Umiu, have a matzli terutze." The answer here could have been, "Delo dami tam de tinofet l'tam de kilayim." That the reasons, the underlying reasons between the two cases are totally different. Kokach, ta'ata mechila ta'ya milsa. That over there, it's all about mechila, right? Deruba machleinish mishum tircha, avayot rivelo machleinish afilim pacha miruba shabo. Tenekalo l'truach v'kulo machar shematchil. Eldo adifim mei kemetar itzle. Gemara has a better answer in the end. But ain't ochanami in the end, right? According to the way the Rashi is reading it, he says that you could. The whole explanation of the difference between the two cases is actually what will cause, you could have different, that differentiation would cause you to say that they have nothing to do with each other. So the Ashram, because of that, he says it's a question, but it's not a real question. So now in the end, the Gemara says, in the end it's not the case. What's the case? The Gemara made an underlying, a very basic assumption, which isn't necessarily true. And you know that every time the Gemara says Sovrua, you know how the Gemara can get out of the problem. The underlying assumption of the Gemara here is right. It was the assumption's wrong, that the premise of the question is wrong. Sovrua said what? That rova of kilayim is equivalent to more than a rova by kitneos by mecha chumemkar. The Gemara says no. Rova de kilayim karuba de hacha, dummy. That a rova is equal by kilayim and the din by mecha machum are identical. So when it says Yachim Ayimait, then why are we machmir by kilayim versus by mekach memkar? When it came to a rova by mekach memkar, there were mochel. Comes to a rova by kilayim, we tell you you have to yimait. Gemara says mishom chumra di kilayim, because you have a chumra of kilayim, right? If you have a chumra of kilayim, that's why the threshold by kilayim is exactly a rova akav, whereas by mekach memkar it's only when it's above rova akav. But in Ochanam, the dinim are going to be exactly the same in both cases. And the only reason you're in my eight over here is because it's a unique din by kilayim that we're talking about rov akav. But rov akav doesn't apply by mekach memkar, so you can't compare the cases whatsoever. So Mar says, if you say that, ema seifa, what are you going to do with the second half of that? Mishnah Rabbi Yoshi Omer, yivor. Right, which means that yivor et hakol, you have to clean the whole thing out. So now, when you say you have to clean the whole thing out, iamart bishlama kiyote meruba. Right, Tino Fidomi, if you say that the case by Kilayim, Rova Kav is equal to more than Rova Kav and Mekach or Memkar, then it makes sense. But Hakam Iflige, that's what they're arguing about. Tanakama Savar, Lokansina, Nete Rato, Yisura. Tanakama believes, listen, right, you did something wrong, you have an Yisur here, but so remove the Yisur. Once you remove the Yisur, that's all right. We don't conase you to take away all the heter as well, that which is below Rova Kav. Rabbi Yossi Sarva Katsinan, and Rabbi Yossi says, no, we are Kones, the Heter Atar Yisura. So by Kilayim, if the case of Kilayim, we say Roba Kav. When it comes to Roba Kav, it's equivalent to more than a Kav by Mecha Chumemkar. And therefore now you're in violation of Kilayim. So you have two possibilities to rectify the problem of Kilayim. One possibility is simply to reduce it below the threshold. So you reduce it below the threshold, fine. Now you're out of the Isra of Kilayim. Now the Chachamim said at this point in time, what? Chachamim said, listen, once you reduced it below the threshold, no problem, you're done. Rabbi Yossi Chachamim says, no, if you're going to reduce it below the threshold, you already violated, you did something wrong by going over the threshold. Once you're over that threshold, clean the whole thing out. Take it all out. We're going to be Kones after Isura. So you got to clear the whole thing out. But Eliyah Mart, if you say Karoba Dami, if you say that Mecha Chumemkar and Kilayim are identical, then am I Yivor? How can you say, according to Rabbi Yossi, that you have to clear the whole thing out? Right? Why do you have to clear? Why do you have to clean it all out? All you had was a Rova Kav. Rova Kav is all a Chumrah. It's not even true. If we say that Kilayim and Mecha Chumemkar are identical, right? If you say that they're identical, then reason that you're chayav, or you need to remove the Isur Kilayim by Rova Kav is not because that's the Ikar Adin. The Ikar Adin is only above Rova Kav, you have to remove it. Why do we force you to remove it when it's a Rova Kav? Because it's a Chumrah of Kilayim. But that's an imposition of a Chumrah. But why would Rabbi Yossi come along? Once we're imposing a Chumrah on Rova Kav, clear the whole thing out. That doesn't make sense. It's already a Chumrah that you have to even do anything when it's Rova Kav. Why would we force you to do Yivor et HaKol? Yomar says, I'll tell you why. Because the problem is, Hatam Hainu Taimo, the reason is, the Rabbi Yossi Mishum de Mechse Kimikayim Kilayim. It's a huge problem. What's going to happen? If you leave, what are you going to do there? You're going to go and pull out. According to Tosus, it's even more so. Right? Tosus says that the stuff's already growing, and now you're going to pull out a couple of little, shoots that are coming out that are of the Zera that's above Rova Kav, and then you're going to leave the rest. When you leave the rest, what does it look like? It looks like that you're intentionally leaving Kilayim. And we have a principle, right? That a person is Mikayim Kilayim in the Karka, it's as if, right? That it's as if you planted it there. When you allow Kilayim to continue to grow in your property, it's as if you planted the Kilayim. So over here, the fact that you remove it to reduce it below the threshold, when you reduce it below the threshold, fine. Now you're outside of the Isur. But for other people, what it looks like is that basically you're saying, I don't want this, but the rest I do want. When I do want the rest, it looks like you're intentionally planting Kilayim or Mimikayim Kilayim, which is an Isur Doraisa, actually, to Mimikayim Kilayim. So that's why Rabbi Yossi says, no. If you're going to reduce, you got to reduce it all. There's only two possibilities. One possibility is you plant it, and you're okay, because you planted below the threshold, and then you can leave it, because that's not considered Kilayim. Once you're above the threshold and we're asking you to be a Yamaik, there's only one large option then too, is to remove all of it. Because if you remove a portion of it, it looks like you are, right, intentionally leaving the other part, the part that you leave, and that will be Kimikayim Kilayim, or Mechse Kimikayim Kilayim. Right, so that's the...
So in a nutshell, the question of the Gemara, the original question of the Gemara, Mesa, Yikol, Sashi, Shirov, etc.
Right. So the original, in a nutshell, we have a case by Kilayim. The Gemara's underlying assumption is that the case by Kilayim is equivalent to our case of Mecha Chumemkar. That might fail on a number of levels. One is that it may fail because, as you pointed out with the Rashbam, that one is a case of Mechila, one's a case of Isur. They might have nothing to do with each other. Right? But Mechila doesn't apply. Once you're above the threshold, he's not Mechila on the whole thing. That's what the Gemara said. That's one possibility. That's not what the Gemara answers. The Gemara answer is, okay, no. I'll tell you what the problem here is. The problem here is that the cases are not equal at all. Because you thought, the case of Kilayim mentions Rova Kav. Mentions Rova Kav as the threshold. Our threshold is above Rova Kav. So the Gemara said, you know what, in the beginning, let's just assume that Rova Kav by Kilayim is equal to above Rova Kav by us. So the Gemara says, no, that's wrong. That's not right. Let's just assume that they're exactly equal. When they're exactly equal, that means that Rova Kav by Kilayim equals Rova Kav by us. Why by Kilayim did you have to remove it? By us, by Mechila, we wouldn't make you remove Rova Kav. That's a Chumrah by Isur of Kilayim. So now the Gemara says, wait, if that's the case, what are you going to do with Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah over there? Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah says they have to clear the whole thing out. You're just saying now that Rova Kav is a Chumrah. So now Rabbi Yossi is going to put a Chumrah on top of a Chumrah and make you clear the whole thing out? No way. So the Gemara goes back the other way and says, no, it has to be, what? If the Rova Kav by Kilayim is equal to Yoter Mi Rova Kav by Mecha Chumemkar, based on our original explanation, then you can explain what the Machlokes between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yossi is, simply, whether we're Kansinan, right, to Heter, Atar Isura. Because here you had an Isur. When you reach Rova Kav, you're Asur. So if you reduce it, you have to reduce it all the way, or do you have to reserve part of the way? That'll be the machlokas. The Gemara says, no, no, you don't have to say that. You can say that they're both totally equal. The cases are completely equal. What are you going to do with Rabbi Yossi? Why does Rabbi Yossi make you reduce the whole amount? If it's simply a chumrah by kilayin that you have to reduce it below the rov hakav threshold, because the threshold is really above rov hakav. Over here, why by rov hakav do we say you have to remove the kilayin? That's simply a chumrah. So why do you have to reduce it more? Rabbi Yossi says, because it looks like you are mechzei kimikayim kilayim. So the conclusion is that the case by kilayim is identical to the case by mekach umemkar. So now we can't prove anything from that, because the reason that you are chayav to reduce it by kilayim kerem is simply a chumrah. That chumrah, machlok is between Rabbi Yossi and the Rabban on how you deal with the chumrah. Chalim say you just reduce it below the threshold, you're fine. He says if you have this chumrah, you have to reduce it. If you only reduce it part of the way, it's mechzei kimikayim kilayim, we're not going to let you do that. So once you have to reduce, you have to reduce it all the way. But that's going to prove nothing about our case of mekach umemkar, which we're talking about above the threshold of rov hakav. My next question here. Gemara says, Tashma. Shnaim shifkidu etzel echad zimaneh bezimatayim. Two people, they pick their trustworthy friend. One of them gives 100 to him. The other one gives him a 200. Zeomer matayim shalev. Zeomer matayim shalev. Each party comes along and says, the 200 that I left with you is my 200. Lotein zimaneh uzimaneh. Each one of them has at least a minimum of 100. So you give each one of them 100. V'shayim minachat shivoy Eliyahu. The last 100 should stay there until what? Eliyahu becomes the machriya for us. We have no way to prove who it belongs to. Question is only according to the lashon of knas. This isn't something that Mikar did. Mikar did, you can't explain it. It's just according to the one who knas. If you say lishna knas, then once we're konis you to take it all the way down. Right over here, we're saying, no, we don't want konis you to take it. If we were going to konis over here in this case, we tell you to keep all the money and not give any money back. What are we seeing over here? That we give the 100 that everybody is common between them, we give that back, and we don't give the extra 100 back. So that should be over here also by the knas. You should have to reduce it below the threshold, and that'll be enough. I mean, why are you taking away everything? Gemara says, Achi Ashta, the cases are not comparable whatsoever. Why? Hotam vadai mana lamar, mana lamar. Over here we know that each person at least gave 100. It's clear. I mean that every person for sure gave 100. Hocha mi yemar delav kule yeruvi arif. Over here, how can you say that the whole mixture wasn't done by him? If we're assuming that once you're above a quarter kav, that it was intentionally placed there, how much was intentionally placed? Could have been that he placed the entire amount there. We have no idea what was the natural threshold versus what he placed over there. So if we're going to make you reduce it, we're going to make you take it all out because we have no idea what you put in anymore. So Tashma Miseifa, what about the second half of that price, Mishnah? We had this already before this Gemara. A number of times, I'm Rabbi Yosim came, Ma'ifsidar Amai. There's no reason not to lie. If I give someone 100, I know the other guy gave 200, I may as well claim 200. I don't lose anything. What's the downside? The downside is I get my 100 back. The upside is I actually get 200 over here. So why not? You penalize everybody. Everybody loses their money. All 300 remains until Yo comes. Now why? That's a disincentive for the cheater to come along and claim 200. Why? Because now he has something to lose. When he makes the claim of 200, he might end up with zero. That he doesn't want to do. He's not going to put up 100 to find out that he gets zero in the end. So that's not a good thing. So Mara says, oh, here, okay, I see. Look, here we have a knas that takes away everything. So over here, when we have a knas, it should take away everything. Gemara says, okay, Ashka, I can compare the cases again. In our case, by the money, there's definitely a liar. We know one of them didn't put 200 here. We only have 300. And both are saying 200. We know one of them is definitely lying. Over here, we don't know for certain that he mixed in anything. We just assume that once it's above a rov hakav, that's not a natural occurring mixture. It could be that sometimes it happens. It's not shchiach, but it could happen sometimes. We have no evidence that he cheated over here. We're just making an assumption that he might have cheated. Once we make that assumption, we make him clear it out. But that doesn't mean for sure he cheated over here. It just means that we suspect that he cheated. In the other case, we know for sure there's a cheater. Once we know there's a cheater, that's why we're konets, because we want the ramai to lose. So maybe there's a difference in this case. So Gemara went both ways by the case of knas. One side that said knas should be just get you below the threshold. The other side that said by Rabbi Yossi, who says knas takes away everything. Gemara tried to go both ways with that to prove in our Gemara whether the knas should be they have to sift just below the threshold or sift the whole amount. Where it says neither case is comparable, right? Neither case is comparable. One case we know for sure that there is a thief. In the other case, right, we don't know there is a thief. And the other way around, right, in the case where we say that you only have to get it below the threshold, each one owned the money. We definitely owned the money. Over here, by our case, it's possible that the mixture, we have no idea how much he put in. Doesn't mean that he just put in above the threshold. It could be that he put in, you know, the whole amount. So therefore, we make him clear it all out because we can't determine what really he did. Come on, next case. Shtar sheyesh bo ribit. And you have a contract that has ribit in it. So this is actually a gemara that we saw together in Baba Kama and Baba Metzia before. The shtar has a ribit in it. Kontinu to beno govel lo etakerem lo te ribit di Rabbi Meir. But Meir says, guess what? You get nothing. If you create a shtar with ribit in it, we're going to say you lose. Not only do you lose the ribit that's in there, but you lose even the keren, you even lose the principal amount. To dissuade people from lending with interest, we're going to make that. If we find a contract with interest in it, we're going to rip the whole thing up. So Mara says, Achiyashta, how can you compare these cases? Hotam mishat ktivo hi davarlei shuma. Right over there, from the moment it's written, there's a violation of the Isur of Lotus Simun Alaf. Right? That the Isur of Lotus Simun Alaf, which we spoke about before, is the simple agreement to write a shtar between a malv and a lovit to agree to pay interest. There's already a violation of the Isur of Ribit. You don't even have to pay it. Once you agree, come to an agreement and contract it or document it, that is already a violation of the Isur Kilayim. So over there, it makes sense that you're going to be Kones the amount because the shtar itself was done by Isur. Right? Over here, we have no proof or evidence, right, that he actually mixed the mixture. We're just assuming because of Shechichu. The question here, again, is going to be on Knas. Over here, we see that the Knas is imposed on the entire document, right? And the Gemara rejects it and says that this cake is unique because the Isser applies immediately and not, right, not later on. So everything was formed by Isser. When it's formed by Isser, we're going to take it away. Over here, we don't know if it was formed by Isser. We have no idea how it got there. We're just making an assumption that since it's over a threshold, that maybe it came there in a bad way. So Gemara says, Tashomi Seifa. What about the second half of that? Right, Mishnevachim Amin, Goveta Karen, Veno Goveta Ribit. The Chamin believe that you get the Karen and not the Ribit. So this should be a proof, what? That you were not kones atu. There you only lose the rebate, but you keep the carrot in place. So over here, you should have to go through the threshold and then not go back. My says, Achi Asher, same answer that we gave before, which is what? Hotam badai karna de terehu. We know that the carrot is mutar. He's allowed to lend money to him. The only thing we know is, Achami Yemar, the kule lo arube arve. Over here, how do we know that the whole amount is not Isur? How do we know that he didn't plant the whole amount, meaning that he put all the dirt in or all the pebbles in? We have no idea. If we're assuming that he put it in, we have no idea how much he put in there. So we have no threshold. We can't say, oh, above the threshold he put in, below the threshold he didn't put in. Once he's already assuming that he mixed it, we don't know how much he put in there. And therefore, there could be Isur across the whole amount. As opposed to by the Karen, where there's no Isur, but the Rebit is clearly the part that's Asur. So therefore, we can't prove anything from this.
Can you say that? When a Malda the Rebis, the Karen is the Heter?
All right, so that's a good question over here. Rabbi Meir believes no. The Chamin believe, yes, that the Karen is Beheter. Now, that's the question over here is what happens when we say Kotzinoto, right? Ve'enu govel lo et Karen ve'lo et ribit. What does that mean? Enu govel lo et Karen ve'lo et ribit. So that Re believes, this is at Tosos, we've seen the sheet in Tosos, both times we saw it in Boba Kama and Boba Masi, we mentioned this. The Knas is that you get nothing. I mean, that you lose the entire Chov. That the debt is gone entirely, it's wiped out. Even if the other person, the debtor admits to it, you don't have to pay it back. He doesn't have to pay it back. Or even if we have Edim that come from another place, it's wiped out. That is the Knas. Knas is that the entire amount is wiped out. It's as if it never existed. And you can't, there's no way. No matter what you do, you can't collect on it.
They both did these.
So that's the problem. So the Rebbe comes along and says, and now you have a Chote Niskar. If Chote Niskar, the Lovet also was in violation of the Isur, and now he's like, he should always put Rebit into his contracts because then he won't have to ever pay back any money.
That's an easy loan.
Right, exactly. It's a great way to bet and borrow money. Just put interest in the loans, right? So that Lovet is Chote Niskar. So the Rebbe does not reject that. And he says, no, the contract is invalid. The shtar is invalid, but the loan is still outstanding. The loan is still extant. If he can bring a deem, or if the Lovet is willing to admit to it, then you have to pay it back. The debt is outstanding, but you can't have a shtar anymore. The shtar is gone. The Re argues back and says, no, what do you mean? That the Lovet and the Malvez Isur are different. They're different. Why? He says, because the Lokasha ke Malvet Marviach Kenaso B'guf Atu Shevach. By the Malvet who benefits from the loan, the Rebis is all to the benefit of the Malvet. So therefore they were Kones, the Guf, Atu the Shevach that he gets. But the Lovet, what are you going to be Kones the Lovet with? There's nothing. There's nothing to be Kones the Lovet with. He doesn't have anything, he's not gaining anything that you can be koneis him with. He's the one who owes the debt. There's no knas that you can impose upon him. I mean, right, you could say, oh, he should have to give the debt to tzedakah. I don't know. But there's no way to be kones l'loveh. Right. So that's the problem. He just says it's a practical problem. The reason that choten nisgar is all a practical issue, not a problem of, okay, yeah, we're helping out the loveh. No. The fact is that who's the beneficiary of the contract? The loveh. If you're kones the loveh, as a side, the loveh gets a benefit. But that's not the ikar of the knas. By the loveh, we cannot be konesim at all because he got no benefit. And so therefore, there's no knas by the loveh. That's the way the re answers. Right, so you have different perspectives on what this contract. Is the contract invalid and the loan is still outstanding? Or do we wipe out the loan entirely over here? Now the chamim, when they come along, depending on what you think Rabbi Meir holds, that will depend on what the chamim say. Right? I mean, if we say that they're a kones, otu, then what do the chamim say? The chamim could say one of two possibilities. According to the rivam, which is that the loan is outstanding, right, but the document's invalid. The Chamim are saying that the document's completely valid, because that's the only difference between them, according to the Rivam. Rav says that the document's invalid according to Reb Meir, according to Rabbanan, it's valid. Whereas according to the Ri, who says the entire loan is wiped out, Chamim could be arguing on different points. They could either say that there's a loan outstanding, the document is invalid, as you said, or they could say, no, that it's totally good. The document's good as well as the loan outstanding. So that would be, depending on the Ri could differentiate in your question about the Rabbanan, when we say that the Karen is Heter, right? The Karen's Heter could be depending on how you think what the Ri says. According to the Rivam, it's clear that it's Heter, you can even keep the contract, according to the Chachamim. According to the Ri, it might be that the loan is still outstanding, but the contract is invalid. Or you could say even further, right, that it's even valid. Now, to your question, how can you have a valid contract? This Tosos asked in both places also, Bob Bakamba, Matziah mentions it here again. What is it? You have Edim, who are violating Easter. Edim who sign on a contract that has rebit in it are in violation of an Isur. They're violation Isur, they're Edim Sulim. If they're Edim Sulim, they can't sign on the contract. They're no good anymore. You don't have a contract with Edim on it anymore. The whole contract's invalid. So Tosfos answers like he does here, that they signed it under duress. That's the only way you can explain it over here. They signed it under duress. He tries to answer it, well, the interest wasn't clear, it wasn't there. He rejects all those answers. At the end, he says they signed it under duress. That they didn't sign it under duress, that's the only way you can explain it. You have a valid contract. That they signed it under dinei nefashot, they were threatened with their lives if they don't sign it, and that's why they signed it over here, and that's why they're edim ksherim. It's a very interesting tosos. Alright, now, Mara tries to bring a proof from Tashma, the Tani Ravin bar Rav Nachman. That this is Ravin bar Rav Nachman. Now this is a question on the tzad that is Dina. Until now we've been questioning the council side, now we're back to the side of Dina. Which is that, lo et mutar bilvadu machzir, machzir lo et kol revaim kulan. When he returns it, he doesn't just return the rova, but he has to return all the revaim kulan. So what's the case? What's this case by Ravin? This is further on in the perek. That when you talk about a beit kur afar ani mocher lecha. Says, I'm going to sell you a beit kur afar, mida bechevel, you measure it out with a string, with a rope, right? The amount that I'm selling you. So now, if he says to him, now it's assumed, not even a sense, even if he doesn't say it, the assumption is that it's, hein yeter, hein chaser, whether it's missing or not, it's not an exact measurement. Today, a beit kur afar, we assume that, what? Fine. If you're missing a rova sa'ah, rova lisa'ah, how many sa'ah in a kor? There are 30 sa'ah in a kor. So the underlying assumption is that there could be up to 30 rivaim over or under on this amount. When you offer a beit kor afar, underlying assumption is that you could be off by 30 rova akav. That's the underlying assumption, that you could be off by that much. Right. Right, it would be, right, 7.5. Right, 7.5 kav. So 7.5 kav, you could be off on a beit kor. Now, what happens if you go over? You're over 7.5 kav. Mean that you gave him a beit kor minus 8 kav or minus 9 kav. What do you have to do? So this is the statement. Ravin bar Nachman lo et mutar bilvad hu makzir. Not just the excess he has to return, al makzir lo et kol harivayim kulan. Once you're making good on this, if you're over the 7.5 threshold, not only do you have to give him back the 1.5 that you're over, or the half that you're over, you have to give him back the whole entire 7.5 as well. You have to clear it all up and give him a full beit kor. Alma. Heichin debay adurei kula mehader. In a case where you have to return, you have to return the whole amount. The Gemara says, achi ashto. Over there, hatam hein chaser hein yater. Now again, not that he said that he said hein chaser hein yater, whether it's over or it's under. Over there, that's the underlying assumption. The underlying assumption is when someone sells a beit kur, he is saying hein yater hein chaser, whether it's over or under. So therefore, whether it's over or under means that, okay, I'm accepting Not that this is what I want. Not that this is what I'm expecting. I'm expecting a Beikur Afar. That's what I'm expecting. Now, I am mochel. I am mochel when you are over or under by 7.5 kav. That I'm willing to be mochel on. That I'm willing to be mochel on. But my underlying assumption is I'm getting a Beikur Afar, and that's what I purchased. Right? Aval, but he says, when it comes to our case over there, over here, the underlying assumption is that the materials, or that which you have, will have dirt in it. There's no question about that. When you purchase the fruits, when you purchase the wheat, we know that there's going to be waste in there. You have to assume that's the case, because that's the natural occurrence of these items. So, min adina, the din is actually different over here. The din by the Beit Kur Afar is that I'm assuming I'm getting a Beit Kur Afar, because you can measure a Beit Kur Afar. Now, hein hechaser hein yatir is an imposition we make on the buyer to say that he's mochel at 7.5 kav, that threshold. But once you cross that threshold, we're not going to impose on him to be mochel anymore. Because that's not his expectation to get this. In our case over here, the expectation is that you're going to get a rova kav of dirt or waste inside of what you purchase. Therefore, when you go over that threshold, maybe simply reducing it to the threshold would be enough. Because the buyer is assuming and expecting to get rova kav. So as long as you get it back to the rova kav, he's getting what he expected. As opposed to by the field, if you're over the 7.5 kav, and then you tell him reduce it to 7.5 kav, he says, I never wanted to get 7.5 kav over here. I want to get a Beit Kur. I don't want you to be off by 7.5 kav. All right, at 7.5 kav, I'm willing to be mochel. But once you go over the threshold, I'm not mochel anymore, meaning that we're not going to impose on him to take less than a Beit Kur Afar. So he's going to say that the cases are different because of the expectations of the buyer. The expectation of a buyer of a Beit Kur Afar is to get exactly a Beit Kur and nothing less, nothing more. We force on him, we impose on him, hen yeter, hen yet chaser, that there's allowed to be a mistake of 7.5 kav. But by the tinofet of the grains that you're buying, there the buyer expects to have waste in it. That's part of his buying, he expects to have waste in it. When he expects to have waste in it, maybe you should have to get it to the threshold of the waste.
There's also a case of mechila by tinofet.
Right, they're both mechila, but it's mechila versus what? By the case of Beit Kur, it's an imposed mechila. And we say to him, don't be so makbid. Right? It's not too much. His expectations get a Beit Kur. And once if he's within a certain threshold, we say, be mochel. That's it. Right? It's not to do, right? There's no tircha about measuring out the exact amount. I mean, you could measure Beit Kur. Over here, the mechila is simply because of the tircha aspect of it. I mean, it's mechila with knowing that you're going to get this in there. There is such, we know that this amount is in there. There's going to be dirt in there. So it's a different type of mechila. One is imposed on the buyer, one is a natural occurrence, and therefore the buyer assumes or expects it. So Mar says, maybe that's different. So Mar says, Amalei miu, revia lo chashiv, yetim revia chashiv. Right, less than a revia, right? Then, right, it's not chashiv. More than a revia already becomes chashuv. But came into chazalit its trufe. If I put together all of them, then it comes out to be tisha kabin. And tisha kabin, I believe, ara chashiv to afinafsha vadra. When you have tisha kabin has significance in halacha and other places. Tisha kabin is considered a significant area which you can plant. So now, once I'm over the threshold of a revia, lechol, right, 30 times a quarter will get me to 7.5. If I'm over that amount of rova kav, I'm already going to get up to tisha kabin. Tisha kabin is a significant piece by itself. That I'm not going to be mochel on. If I'm already, you're reducing my Beit Kur that I purchased from you by more than a field, basically. That I'm not going to accept. I'm willing to be mochel when it's within the context of less than a field, less than a significant ara. But once you reach a level of significance, give me my field. Give me everything that you're supposed to give me. I'm not going to be mochel on that amount. That would be the difference here in the mechila. The difference in the mechila is whether, right, it's significant already. Once it reaches a level of significance, then we're not going to say that the buyer here says, oh yeah, sure. You know, you just keep taking more and more, I don't mind. No, or you get it back to 7.5 kav, that's okay. No, once we reach a level of significance, he says, hand me that significant amount back. Over here by the tinofit again, it's simply rova kav is a threshold. Once you go below that threshold, people expect to buy stuff with, or buy items, produce with that type of waste in it. When they expect that, that's okay. And, alright, we'll stop over here.